Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories making news across South Sudan and around the region this Friday, October 27th, 2023. Some South Sudanese say they're hopeful that this time the warring parties meeting in Jeddah will end and find a peaceful way to end the fighting.
People have really suffered. Some families were destroyed, others fled, and houses closed down. We expect that two rivals signed a peace deal now and people return to their states.
And why hasn't South Sudan set up a hybrid court yet? Well, one official says it's all got to do with a lack of security arrangements.
Chapter 2 would create the unified force. A force that is neither IG or IO or SOA, a neutral force that belongs to all of us South Sudanese.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese living in the capital, Juba, or Sudanese, that is, are welcoming the resumption of peace talks between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and say they expect the rival groups to use this opportunity to end the conflict and allow thousands of Sudanese who sought refuge in neighboring countries to return home. More than 9,000 people have died in the conflict so far. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports. From Juba.
Amira Abdallah, a Sudanese living in Juba as an urban refugee, says she expects the Jeddah peace talk to end the suffering of the Sudanese people. Amira appeals to the two rival sides to end the ongoing fighting and allow Sudanese people to return to their homes.
People have really suffered. Some families were destroyed, others fled, and houses closed down. We expect that two rivals signed a peace deal now and people return to their states.
Hadia Muhammad, another Sudanese refugee in Juba, says she looks forward to seeing a stable and secure Sudan where people are free and happy.
We expect well. Comes these negotiations, they should sign the peace deal so that people will stay in a secure and stable Sudan. We expect to see people are happy. We want to see people well and healthy without any crisis.
Amir Hassan Ibrahim is a Sudanese businessman in Juba. He says he too looks forward to seeing the two rival groups talk peace by addressing the root causes of the fighting that erupt mid-April. Ibrahim stresses that Sudanese rivals should look at the suffering of the Sudanese people and do the right thing.
People need to sit down and look at and do what is good, because the Sudanese people are tired in a way you can't imagine. First, there is a rise in prices and rise in the dollar rate due to ongoing war. People are tired and displaced and cannot return unless the war stops. We hope that things would be good and return to what they were before, that people would live in peace, security and harmony.
Ibrahim says the two rival military groups should sign a comprehensive peace agreement that is inclusive.
I hope that will be an agreement in which both parties will not be wrong, an agreement that both parties will be satisfied with, and on the basis of which things will proceed. In the end, the RSF will come down and leave the bad things behind them. The country is their country, and there is no need for evils and strife. This is not right. It is true that we are all Sudanese, and people are looking for the best and returning to normal things.
The United Nations estimates that more than 900 people have been killed and about 6 million displaced from their homes since the conflict broke out in April. UN says an estimate of more than 30,000 Sudanese refugees and asylum seekers have sought refuge in South Sudan since conflict broke out in April this year. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
On Under the 2018 peace deal, South Sudan's transitional government of national unity was required to form a hybrid court, a commission for truth, reconciliation, healing, compensation, and reparations authority. So far, none of that has happened. The South Sudan Minister for Cabinet Affairs says delays in implementing security arrangements has affected work on the transitional justice mechanisms. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
According to the initial timeline for implementing the revitalized 2018 peace agreement, the transitional government should have established transitional justice mechanisms in 2022. But South Sudan's Minister for Cabinet Affairs, Martin Elia Lomuro, says the current environment in South Sudan is not suitable for the implementation of Chapter 5 of the peace agreement. He says the delays in implementing security arrangements outlined in Chapter 2 of the peace deal delayed the establishment of the transitional justice mechanisms.
Chapter 2 would create the unified force, a force that is neither IG or IO or SOA, a neutral force that belongs to all of us South Sudanese, a force that would be comprising of all the communities of South Sudan. And that force, once deployed, will not only protect the territory of South Sudan, but also provide security for the civilians and their properties through the police force and the national security. That would create a secure security environment that the citizens will be confident to return back from refuge.
Lomuro says the Council of Ministers approved a bill for the establishment of the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing early this month, adding that this bill will be presented in Parliament. But Pokoboth Baluang, acting spokesperson in the office of First Vice President Riek Machar, says the Justice Ministry should present the bill in Parliament for ratification.
We have no idea of why there was a delayment. However, it is good that it has been passed because the transition of justice is very important, and it is part of the process of the elections, and there's a need for the people to reconcile and also to justice to take place.
Gordon Lam, Executive Director for Dialogue and Research Institute, a rights organization, was part of the process that led to the formulation of the bill for the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing. He says the proposed bill for the formation of the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing is important for restoring peace in the country.
The commission itself should be a non-partisan. It shouldn't be politicized. The personnel within the commission that will be formed would be trusted people, people that has character, that is nationalist character, and then people that have not been incriminated in any criminal act across the country, or those who have not involved in any corruption.
Lam says the commission should be independent and credible to protect victims of rights abuses.
People have to come out and say what happened, and then allow the victims themselves to stand and register with the commission. And the commission will try to register all the faces of all the communities that have been affected by armed conflict in the country, and those groups that have been victimized, or victim women, girls that have suffered sexual violence and abducted, and also those who have suffered enforced disappearance, and as a result of internal conflict in South Sudan.
The signatories of the 2018 peace agreement are expected to establish a hybrid court and a compensation and a reparations authority, all of which constitute part of the transitional justice mechanisms. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The Vital Voices 22nd Annual Global Leadership Award Ceremony was held Wednesday night here in Washington at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, where the attendees honored Sudanese women's activist Inas Muzamel. Muzamel is a pro-democracy activist and human rights defender who coordinates crisis response efforts to support women and girls in Sudan. As the co-founder and managing director of a group called Mandania, which promotes civic engagement engagement. She was instrumental in the 2019 pro-democracy revolution that led to the ouster of longtime leader Omar al-Bashir. Muzamel was forced to evacuate from her home in Khartoum after the bloody conflict between two warring generals broke out in April. But she tells me via Skype that she still leads critical relief efforts and connects survivors of sexual violence to health care and basic services.
I work in a national small organization called Madania, which means civilian-led, you know, state. And we work in the area I do, like my favorite work, which is empowerment of women and young women through projects and programs, like building their capacities in some fields, like providing safe spaces for them to discuss difficult issues like gender and religion, gender and ethnicity, these kind of things, legal reforms, the social pressure. I also work in the advocacy for the inclusion of women in peace processes, and also the advocacy for the peace in the country. I work also in the area of promoting like human rights in the country.
After you and other groups like yourself were successful in making Omar al-Bashir step down and a new government, for at least a transitional government, at least for a while, was there, weren't some of the laws, some of the antiquated laws that were discriminatory against women eliminated?
Mainly the public order law, but the problem is the public order law, it still exists within the Sudan criminal law. So 90% comes from there, because all these things and difficult parts of the law are coming straight from the religion. And that's something you cannot change, because it has to do with the identity of the state, and the separation between the state and the religion is almost impossible, never happened.
What do you tell women who are facing that kind of patriarch society? How do you help when you say you build capacity? How do you encourage women to be strong and to express themselves?
We start usually with helping them to move within the space that they have, even if it's very small. Like, we start with education. They have to know their rights. Sometimes they don't know their rights. They don't know that they have certain rights still they can enjoy. They have to resist and not to accept things as they are. And also, there is, like, after the revolution in Sudan, a big, like, awareness campaign that happened, especially with this contribution of women, remarkable contribution to the overthrow of Omar al-Bashir. And too many women, yeah, you saw them in the videos are going on the streets. Some of them are very conservative. Some of them are even using niqab covering them. But they still, they want democracy, because they know what democracy can bring to them. At the same time, we keep advocating for their rights by putting pressure on policymakers. I'm always asking, like, the international community, always it's our helpers, by putting pressure on the government to sign and ratify international agreements, because we are isolated, and the Sudan is not signing most of them.
It seemed like Sudan was so close to having a real transitional government that was moving toward a democratic form of government. And then it all got, you know, stamped out with this conflict between the two warring generals. Do you still have hope? Do women still have hope from Sudan that things will turn out right?
Yes, I still have hope. 75% of the population and their young people are really motivated. And yes, they're ready for the change. They are full of hope. They cannot win it now, this battle against guns and this torturing and arresting and so. But at some point, I think another revolution will come to Sudan.
That was Enas Mazumel. She's co-founder of the Sudanese organization Mandania. She was speaking to me yesterday via Skype here in Washington. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, the fighting in neighboring DRC is widening as battles between M23 rebels and other groups comes close to a major city. Stay tuned.
do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What do you do on the weekends?
Over the weekend, I happen to read my books, the novels, and sometimes I go for my leisure time, play pool tables, and watch football because I'm a fan of Arsenal.
Weekends, most of the time I listen to music, I go to the beach, I hang out with my friends. Sometimes I go to the clubs, but mostly, most of my time I'm always with my mom.
It is very good. Weekend is something where you can enjoy your life with either your boyfriends, girlfriends, your friends and colleagues sometime. So it can be in form of swimming, playing footballs and watching football. I'm a great fan of football.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Fighting between M23 rebels and self-defense groups is approaching the city of Goma in North Kivu province in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The blast of heavy weapons can now be heard from the outskirts of the provincial capital, worrying residents there who say they've had enough of the Congolese government's indifference. Reporter Zanem Neti Zaidi has details.
From the northern districts of the city of Goma, heavy gunfire can be heard from the front line of Kibumba since the early hours of Thursday. According to civil society activist Dieu Merci Mungwa Konkwa, the panic among Goma's residents should be a wake-up call to the Congolese government. He says the residents of Goma and its surrounding areas are living in fear because they can hear the detonation of heavy weapons being fired by M23 rebels in the northern part of the city, while the National Army, FRDC, continues to observe the ceasefire and people are being killed. This is not acceptable, he says, and the government must assume responsibility. On the one side, M23 rebels are clashing with young self-defense fighters on the Kibumba axis, some 20 kilometers from Goma in Nyiragongo territory. On the other, they are firing shells at FRDC positions, according to the army. It denounced the death of a soldier from the Kenyan contingent of the East African Community Regional Force last Tuesday, following a bomb reportedly dropped by the M23 on their position. The new tensions have led to the suspension of school activities in Rutshuru territory, from where Felix Gakiza, the president of the Elementary School Teachers Union, fears the loss of the anterior year. He says last year they had no school activities, which they have tried to resume this year in accordance with the school calendar, but there are still clashes which have led to the suspension of the educational agenda. In Kiwanja and Rutshuru Center, activities are progressing, but each time there is a sound of shooting, they are suspended. In an address to the media earlier this week, Foreign Minister Christophe Lutundula said that the Congolese government is getting impatient with the lack of a peaceful resolution of the conflict in eastern DRC. He says the government of the Republic and the president have constantly asked the international community to act, but he has the impression that it's too late. He says he doesn't think the Democratic Republic of Congo is a state that specializes in building walls of laments. The clashes in the town of Kibumba have prompted the World Food Programme to suspend its operations in Nyiragongo territory despite the disparate humanitarian situation in the camps for internally displaced people. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Neti Zaidi in Goma.
For a U.S. president who campaigned on ending so-called forever wars, Joe Biden now faces a conflict in Gaza on top of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and rising Sino-U.S. tensions over Taiwan. How he handles these challenges may impact his re-election bid in 2024. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Whitaker-Squara has this report.
Amid mounting Palestinian deaths from Israeli airstrikes that the Hamas-run health ministry in Gaza says have surpassed 7,000, this comment from U.S. President Joe Biden.
I have no notion that the Palestinians are telling the truth about how many people are killed. I'm sure innocents have been killed, and it's the price of waging a war.
The statement angered American Arabs, Muslims, and others already protesting Biden's handling of the war in Gaza. Robert McCaw from the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the largest Muslim advocacy group, via Skype.
This is shocking and dehumanizing. Would the president feel better if 1,000 Palestinian children had died?
Progressives are also angry. 9 members of Congress, mostly from the progressive wing of Biden's Democratic Party, voted against a resolution backing Israel and condemning Hamas because it did not mourn the loss of Palestinian lives or mention the two-state solution. Various polls show more Americans sympathize with Israelis than with the Palestinians, though younger Americans are more divided. Larry Sabato, director of the University of Virginia Center for Politics, via Skype.
With American Jews, a very important group in terms of votes and also contributions to the Democratic Party, there's been almost universal praise for President Biden and the way he's handled this.
Republicans in Congress are increasingly skeptical of Biden's commitment to fund foreign wars, including newly elected House Speaker Mike Johnson, who is again sending more money to Ukraine without conditions, but is sympathetic to Israel.
The first bill that I'm going to bring to this floor in just a little while will be in support of our dear friend Israel, and we're overdue in getting that done.
The share of voters who approve of Biden's handling of the issue has increased by 9 percentage points since the days immediately following Hamas' attack on Israel. How the war in Gaza will impact Biden's re-election bid in 2024 will depend on whether the conflict can be contained. In neighboring Lebanon, cross-border attacks have intensified between Israel and Iran-backed Hezbollah. Again, Larry Sabato.
If we get involved directly in these forever wars, yes, Biden will suffer. As long as he keeps American troops out of the line of fire, I don't think it will be nearly as controversial, and I don't think it will be a major factor in people's votes.
Sabato added another key factor, whether Palestinian deaths can be minimized and humanitarian aid delivered. Patsy Whitaker-Squara, VOA News at the White House.
It's that time of the week when we sit back and hear what you have to say about what's happening in the news and our coverage of the news with our listener comments segment. Here to bring us those views is Charlton Doki in Juba. Take it away, Charlton.
James Ray Majok from Bentiu Town in Unity State writes, "Hi, Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. Everyone feels like something will happen at midnight. A retaliatory response by the U.S. to eastern Syria and Iraq because of panic around the globe. May the war cease immediately in the Middle East and Africa." Jacob Dior Machweng from the Kenyan town of Thika writes, "The world is silent on the ongoing conflict between Hamas and Israel, and the indications are that it could lead to the Third World War. The 5 UN permanent security members that include the United States, Russia, France, China, and the United Kingdom should bring about a ceasefire so that the world becomes a peaceful place to be." And Thok Chuni Yok Kwai from Juba writes, "To me, the issue of Sudan will not be solved by the government of South Sudan because leaders from the IGAD countries are not supporting the Kiir administration to solve the Sudanese problem." And both Bim Dothai from Juba writes, "Hello, John Tanza, Nabil Biagio, and Caro Van Damme. Good evening. As a citizen, I have concerns that the money for salaries of organized forces and civil servants was increased by 400%, but still, the price of food commodities is going higher and higher in the market. Why? My appeal to the government is that it should look into these issues seriously. Peter Goch Anyang Majongdul in Kadiang of Dukpa UL says the decision made by not paying the other unified forces is a total violation of the 2018 peace agreement. Once the forces are unified, then they are part of the National Army or police, and there shouldn't be other preconditions that block them from getting their salaries. The Ministry of Finance should consider them. Akol Nicholas Madut from Block 14, Kwajok Town writes, "Hello, Tanza. I am very delighted to South Sudan in Focus for bringing us accurate news across South Sudan and around the world. May God bless you, my beloved journalist, for your excellent efforts to inform the people of South Sudan. One day, one time, South Sudan will be respected by the whole world after we stop unknown gunmen." Hilarisco Bonki from Joppa in Juba writes, "Good evening, VOA. I am always following and enjoying all of your programs right from Monday to Friday, and I am happy for that. But one thing is that I am really sad because of the bloody fighting that is happening between Israel and Hamas. Innocent people are being killed. A Reuters crew has been killed. I suggest the international community should press Israel to end its bombardment on Gaza. The lives of civilians matter a lot." Mal Adau Mal in Seattle writes, "Hello, Caro. The warring parties will not deliver anything tangible in South Sudan as long as there is rapid insecurity that makes the revitalized peace agreement swing in balance. We never had elections and shouldn't rush into it because we may end up exacerbating this fragile economic and political atmosphere." Solank Moses from Amugo refugee camp writes, "I am wishing all South Sudanese studying in Uganda success to be stronger and stronger. Love you, my dear countrymates. One love." And Emmanuel Salah from Juba says, "Hello, VOA. The salary increment for civil servants, especially the soldiers, was a good move by the government of South Sudan. But still, the local population is starving due to loss of value of the local currency against foreign currencies in the market. I urge the government to take action, or else this salary increment won't make a great change in South Sudan. Thanks, VOA, for keeping us updated."
And that wraps it up for us this Friday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If by chance you missed part of this broadcast, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Riziki by Jamnazi Africa. We have been listening to Riziki by Jamnazi Africa. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Peter Hundley, and our producer, our excellent producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for joining us. Have a terrific weekend, everybody. And we'll see you back here on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Choma sasa mwauza usiku, mali mali sasa mwauza usiku, hata maombi nyingi mwafanya usiku, koinange muna tafuta usiku, wake kwa waume shuku.
shughuli zenu usiku. Hata safari nyingi mwaeni.